to the Time Variance Authority. I'm Miss Minutes. Settle in, sharpen your pencils, and check this out.
Welcome back to I Want My MCU TV with Don Melton, Kelly Gamont, and me, Lisa Schmeiser. We are now burdened with the glorious purpose of tackling Loki, where we will be recapping, reacting, and reeling our way through the next 6 weeks as we try to figure out, as we try to untangle the Mebus strip of Agent Mobius, figure out how many Lokis can fit into one series, and whether or not we're all secretly Minutemen in our hearts. We took a few weeks off because, you know, so did Disney Plus. So I'd like to remind listeners of the podcast how this works. We generally have three segments we do. First, we recap the episode, hitting the high points that we think are worth paying attention to and what happened. The point of the recap is so you can fake your way through talking about the MCU if you haven't seen the episode yet. The second part of the podcast episode, and you know, one of my personal favorites, is the reaction
where we talk
about what we loved about this episode, what stuck with us, why it stuck with us, and what's clanging around in our brain pans after a few viewings. And then finally, and this is another one of my favorite parts of the episode, it's really where Kelly and I just marvel at Don Melton's deep cut knowledge of Marvel Comics canon, and he educates us all on the Easter eggs and background lore we may not have picked up. All right, those preliminaries out of the way, let's get to another one of my favorite parts of this podcast. They're all my favorite parts, obviously. Another one of my favorite parts of this podcast, which is the Who Shall Do the Recap Ritual. Every week we ask, Dawn, Kelly, would you guys like to do the recap for this episode?
Dawn, do you want to tell her?
Oh, God, no.
All right, there we go, Kelly.
What Don said. I mean, yeah, like we're a pretty unified front on this for the most part.
So. All right. So I guess it's up to me. Burdened with the glorious purpose of recapping the inaugural episode to the Loki series, a series that I feel has been pretty heavily promoted. So maybe we could all write the recap at this point. Anyway, we open up this series by picking up on one of the threads deliberately left dangling in the movie Avengers Endgame. This particular thread is the one where the Avengers are like doing their time travel caper. They go back to 2012 and the Chitauri invasion of New York because they need to pick up like a whole bunch of time stones at once. And as they're going to capture the Tesseract, i.e. the big blue glowy square, big blue glowy cube, there's like Hulk shenanigans. Long story short, a Tesseract ends up skittering across the floor, and a particular Loki of 2012 like gives everybody the 1-2, grabs it, and whips his way out of the movie. Anyway, time traveling capers, we never really find out what happens in that particular timeline. Or do we? Because Loki ends up in the Gobi Desert giving his "I am burdened with a glorious purpose, blah, blah, blah" act to a bunch of really unimpressed Mongol nomads. And before he can continue his career path as the second coming of Temujin, the Time Variance Authority shows up to nab him. He's then thrown into the setting for most of the rest of the episode, which is the Time Variance Authority, or the Time Bureau. It's this wonderful Eisenhower-y space age pastiche in terms of the aesthetics and the workplace culture, with a little bit of a Stalin-era government going on, such as their willingness to cheerfully torture and or zap people without much discussion. Anyway, the whole point to Loki being here is we establish a couple different character beats. We establish that the character of Loki is still a circa 2012 jerk. We also establish
a mischievous scamp.
You know, he says that, but I feel like that's just really, really positive spin. We also establish the character of Mobius, Agent Mobius, who keeps Loki from being, you know, disappeared as a rogue variant, and does a couple different things. One, we establish that he's a little bit of an out-of-the-box thinker, which is something of an anomaly at the TVA. Two, like with one or two carefully crafted conversations with Loki, he basically pokes holes in all of his self-mythologizing and gets him to admit that Loki can outthink anybody, but underneath he's like weak and scared and somebody who has invented a purpose for himself, because he's actually kind of still looking for something. It's a great, great interrogation back and forth. I highly recommend that people find it on YouTube. Anyway, the reason Mobius has kept this variant of Loki alive is there's somehow another variant of Loki who has been hop, skipping, and jumping through the timeline, creating problematic branches. We'll get to that in a moment. And, you know, doing some murders. And Mobius wants this Loki to track down another Loki. So I'm very excited about the prospect of multiple Lokis on my screen. we also established that Loki's motivations here. He gets a chance, thanks to some, you know, fantastical technologies, to see how his whole life is going to play out along the timeline. To see that he ends up, through some of his actions, killing his mom, and he sees how he dies. And by the end of it, we're like, Loki's clearly desperate to live, and Loki is clearly desperate to jam a thumb into the eye of the TVA because he doesn't like where his future is headed. We'll see over the course of these six episodes whether Loki is going to go along with the TVA and their fanatical insistence that there is just one quote-unquote sacred timeline, or whether Loki's going to end up reviving a multiverse just in time for a few MCU movies. above all, this episode was a really handy reminder that once you're messing with time, you're basically throwing a sack full of plot complicated kittens onto a ball of fourth dimensional yarn. The TVA is like, we wrangle the kittens and unravel the knots. But if things like their incendiary devices that blow up anybody who happens to come into a variant are any indication, or their willingness to zap people out of existence for not having an admission ticket are any clue, they're basically a pair of homicidal kitten stabbing scissors. So that's where we are after one episode. Multiple Lokis, kitten stabbing scissors, and an exciting new look and an exciting new feel in Marvel's third show on Disney Plus.
I am 100% here for the TVA aesthetic.
Yes.
I just need to get that out there for everyone. Mm-hmm. This looks like everything I was shown as a child that was basically implying this is what the future looks like. So okay, I love it.
Let's move into the reaction part, because this is absolutely where I feel like we're going to spend some time today.
I like this so much, this show, mm-hmm. this opening episode so much. I watched it all the way through three times because when I started watching it, I couldn't pause to do my little investigations and stuff. The other thing that impressed me was, my wife said, and she doesn't normally watch the shows until there's a few episodes ganged up, but she was interested in this. And she said, hands down, this is the best show and the best start of the three so far for the MCU. And my wife is just known for being stingy for show compliments. My sister, who's even a bigger comics nerd than I am, just totally fell in love with it. And I was stunned at how well it was visually put together and how many people sort of missed the point of that. Because like Kelly, this is like this is like going through the House of Tomorrow in Disneyland in the early 60s. Mm-hmm.
Dawn, I hate that you said that, because that was the observation through my head. I kept thinking, this is like Epcot, or like you said, Tomorrowland. There's this really aggressively designed and curated aspect to the TVA that is both beautiful and menacing.
Right. And people thought it was cheap and they had poor production values because of that in the show.
Oh, please.
And they totally didn't get it. You know how much work went in to getting those various shades of orange correct?
I loved the courtroom because there's a couple things I love about it. I love the heroic realism posters, because this plants the seed that you're like, this is propaganda. These guys are working in a really heavily propagandized bureau. And then you've got that huge wall of what appears to be wood with the faces of the timekeepers. And I was reminded of every 1950s living room where you did have different primitive culture masks on the walls. And you had that blend of organic textures and space age aesthetics. And I just kept thinking Eisenhower, Cold War,
totalitarianism, like, we haven't really teased out a whole lot about the nature of the TVA yet, other than the fact that that poor sweet boy doesn't know what a fish is. But
oh yes, Eugene Cordero as Casey is my new favorite character.
Yeah,
I was like, if he looks from The Good Place.
That's what I was gonna say. If he looks familiar to anybody, and you're like, have I seen him in a thing? He seems like a face I've seen before. He was Pillboy on The Good Place, and it bothered me a lot until I figured that out.
The other thing that just amazed me that people didn't get why they did the Infinity Stones. Mm-hmm. They thought it was campy and silly.
I have thoughts.
It was writing genius to do that, because it was instantly deflating to Loki.
That was the pivot.
That was
for him.
Exactly. It was exactly the point. And what a way to make the pivot so easily. Loki, when he sits down in the end with Mobius M. Mobius, that's the full name of the character,
yeah.
Agent Mobius M. Mobius, and he just deflatedly sits down the step and he says, the TVA is formidable. And that's what you're supposed to pull from this whole thing. They may be nuts. They may be wrongheaded. But, oh God,
the inertia.
You shouldn't screw with them.
Whether you agree or not with what they're doing, like, the scale on which they do it is irrefutable. That was the thing I thought about. Like, here's the thing is, we call them Infinity Stones here in Midgard. And at the TVA, they live in the junk drawer.
They're paperweights.
Yeah. And so I feel like that moment, because I also felt like this was also still an interesting character beat for Loki, because he's very smart. And that was the moment when he figured out, like, all the regular stuff I do all the time, you know, do you know who I am? I am a god, you know, kneel before me, and all the stuff that he does, you know, here again, you know, Midgardians totally fall for all that stuff. And realizing that here, where we call them Infinity Stones, they're like, yeah, some of the guys have them as paperweights.
I love that. Because it's like, we see them all the time. Meh.
Yeah. They're like, infinity. That's cute. You know, and that was the moment when he realized that, like, whatever scale you use to measure, the TVA is going to outclass him.
Well,
whatever it is.
What I really love about the aesthetics of the TVA is how they cloak how awful and terrifying they are. Because you have the guy who makes Loki sign a statement. Oh, have you certified that you've said literally
everything
in your life
you've ever said?
And, you know, we have seen discussions on, oh, why is there the dot matrix printer sound when meep, 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 meep? But what that disguises, like that whole quaint, clunky, bureaucratic thing disguises, is the fact that Loki has been surveilled in real time his entire life. And then you move into how casually dehumanizing the TVA is, with the fact that they routinely blow up people, places, and things that have come into contact with the variant through no fault of their own, and how they casually disintegrate things. And they have this fanatical purpose, like, be it political, religious, whatever. I'm really hesitant to say, oh, the show is about the same way we're like, oh, WandaVision is about grief, and oh, the Falcon and the Winter Soldier is about racism. But I am super curious to see how this unfolds and what they are saying about the nature of bureaucracies and missions.
I think part of this is going to be about identity. But getting to that, did anybody going through that whole scene, and by the way, Loki's dropped through the various rooms, did anybody else get a Brazil vibe from that? I mean, this is just total Terry Gilliam nutso.
100%.
It's just they must have, like, called him in as a consultant or something. I thought Kate Herron, the director, who's, by the way, going to direct all the episodes, and props to Marvel for hiring a female director again for one of their... she just totally challenged Gilliam there. And with the casting together of such great little character actors there. And getting Tara Strong to do Miss Minutes.
Oh, that was genius.
Miss Minutes was both hysterical and bladder emptying, terrifying. Yes, she was just. And did you wait until the She has a thing at the very, very end of the credits.
Oh,
okay. That I missed because...
I don't think I saw the very, very end of the credits. Yeah.
You got to go. You got to go right before they do the Disney translation credits.
And she's okay. There.
So I listened to her the first time through, there's these, oh, let us know how we're doing. And I thought, this is such a perfect send up of all of that empty rhetoric that every single corporation in America dishes at people when they're like, we don't care, but we're going to make noises like we pretend we do.
Your call is important to us.
Exactly. And it was perfect how on the nose it was. Everything in this episode felt incredibly on the nose, except Loki. And I love how he pops out like a sore thumb. He's too messy. He's too emotional. He's too reactive.
There's too much to what he's doing. And he's I dug that. Yeah. He's very extra, as they say.
He's also freaking hysterical. I think a lot of us forget what a great comedy and physical actor Tom Hiddleston is.
Yes.
Because he nailed it.
I mean, I don't, but I love being reminded. Just like I love being reminded that Chris Hemsworth can be funny. And like anytime they do something that sort of stretches out a little bit from what we sort of think of as comic book stuff, you know, or superhero stuff. I appreciate when we get those, like the TVA being weird.
Yeah.
And I like the little, the other little stuff that was sprinkled through the episode, like the Infinity Stones. You know, this is a nightmare. No, that's another department.
Yeah. And don't you want him to go back to that, Kelly?
Yes. I'm like, can we see? Like, yeah, like I
don't
did
think they make maps in dimensions we can perceive. I think
no, they probably don't. But like, I feel like the setup for the show, I think, came from that conversation where they're walking, where they have the little walk and talk in that hallway where you can see out into the rest of the TVA
before they go into the time theater.
Yeah.
Right?
When Loki says, like, I'm going to burn this place down. I'm going to burn this whole place to the ground. And Mobius says, you can start with my desk. Like, I really feel like that is going to be like, that's the setup for the rest of the episodes, in my opinion. Like, that's exactly where we're going to be. And I loved, like, Loki actually got to have a tiny little journey in this episode. The only thing I really didn't like about it is that I don't dig The Dark World as a film. I found it a slog. And so having those little reminders of like, oh yeah, like, because by the way, I've reeled Mr. Kelly into this one too. He was actually enthusiastic about watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And so reeled him into it. And then what we were doing with the Falcon and the Soldier can't be friends is... we were like in the time between, we would watch like one of the related films to like backfill some of the story between them. So like I was like, oh, I guess, you know, if we really want to get down to it, like we'd have to sit through the second Thor movie. And I'm not sure I have the intestinal fortitude for that, because I just found that one really boring.
This is so funny because that's my wife's favorite Thor movie.
Oh, yeah. Clearly, she hasn't seen Ragnarok. I'm kidding.
No,
I'd like
she's,
to talk
she's
about Mobius for a few minutes.
Yeah, I love him. And so anyway, like the piece of it that I loved about this was I feel like their dynamic was set up in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got some other little bits of stuff.
I think we need to look at Mobius a little bit more closely, because if you look at how he establishes rapport with Loki, like the burning thing, I'm sure there are like Marvel Kremlinologists who are all, oh, he wants to take down the TVA from within, blah, blah, blah. Like, fine. I'm not here for that right now. But what I am here for is the way he just kind of casually... I wouldn't call it gray rocking, but the way he just kind of casually defangs all of Loki's rhetorical flourishes while simultaneously establishing a rapport. And then you see him go in hard on the interrogation. And it was fascinating to me, like how low-key police procedural this got. You see him as basically the consummate puzzle solving cop. And I found myself just really attracted to his performance, because now I want to know, was he made this way or did he become this way? Like the question of personhood and how people get created to work in the TVA is super interesting. But
and creepy.
And how did he become so good at his job? And
and what are the tensions going on between him, Hunter B-15, and the weird relationship with Ravonna Renslayer?
Yes.
And that
yes.
stuff. I will tell you this. I did read that Owen Wilson, who, by the way, just does a fabulous job and never once says, wow,
no,
in the show.
Or ka-chow, which I was also waiting for.
Yeah, which he and Kate Herron, the director, got together. And they sort of based the relationship and what they were going with there is Good Will Hunting, of all things. So they went to this whole idea of him being an analyst, a detective, a mentor, and a therapist.
Yeah.
And that's what they were going on for the relationship with Loki. And Owen Wilson just nails it. And by the way, might add, as that man has gotten older, his nose is even more severely
It's an entity unto itself. I think it has its own evolution track that it's upon. Yeah.
As it and the man just has a brilliantly interesting face. But I think her name is Wunmi Mosaku, who I wasn't actually familiar with before as Hunter B-15.
Oh, she's so good.
But she's so like good.
Yeah.
And why didn't we get more of Gugu Mbatha-Raw as Ravonna? I mean,
He kept winding her back into another room. That's why.
No, that's
that's Hunter B-15 that he kept.
B-15.
Yeah, I've got the wrong one.
Ravonna is the judge, right?
Yeah.
And so I wanted more of her too, and I also wanted to know, being a comic nerd, what in the Sheol is she being a judge at the TVA got to do with anything from her character from the comics?
Well, can I conjecture upon that?
Yeah.
So, I looked up the judge and I looked up the hunter and I looked and so because I wanted to know like their from their names like who they are, and Ravonna Renslayer, the judge, is apparently a common rival of Kang the Conqueror.
Mm. Well, and rival is the wrong thing to say.
Well, no, lover, because we're not rival. Moving. Why don't we move into so?
Are we moving to really?
Yeah, I think we are. And I realize we're moving through this at lightning speed, for which I apologize. Let's just imagine that some malicious force just rewinding and fast forwarding and rewinding fast. Anyway, yes. this is actually provides us with a perfect way to segue into really. Because Don, it sounds like you've got some knowledge to drop on us here. And Kelly, it sounds like you've got a line of inquiry that you want to push forward. So
I
take it away.
I have a couple of things I know, and I have a couple of things that I'm connecting dots. So, Ravonna Renslayer, I said rival, but sometimes it was romantic with Kang. I remember that.
Yeah.
About that, right, Don? Cause like sometimes they were dating and sometimes super not.
The thing to remember, and let me back up, is you are completely correct and completely wrong, but there's a good reason for that. And let me explain. Kang and if anybody doesn't know who Kang the Conqueror is, by the way, let me back up and explain that. Mm-hmm. Kang and Ravonna were characters that were invented back in the 60s, unlike the TVA, which was basically invented in the mid 80s. But they were invented in the 60s as characters for foes for the Avengers. And Kang the Conqueror is, you know, he's a 40th century character who's goes back and forth in time and whatever, and has been like an ancient Egyptian king and stuff like that. And anyway, he had the hots for Ravonna, 39th, 41st century, whatever. He's engineered all kinds of things, and he's both, and this is the thing to remember with the comics, try to piece it together in your head, you will go insane, because Kang has been a foe of the Avengers, he's been an ally of the Avengers, and he's basically three different characters in the Marvel universe. He's Kang the Conqueror, and before he's Kang the Conqueror, he's a divergent version of him becomes Iron Lad for the Young Avengers, and a really old, fed up with the wars and all the crap he's created, becomes Immortus, working for the three TVA time lizards, space lizards.
Okay.
So it's very, very complicated, but at one time, he gets rejected by Ravonna. He has an affair with Ravonna. He gets married to Ravonna. He kills Ravonna.
As you do Ravonna, after you marry her.
They have all the feels
Ravonna,
together.
Yeah, Ravonna kills him. It's just nuts.
So they celebrate their third anniversary.
Yeah, their third anniversary. And so if they bring Kang into this mess, oh God, because talk about a person who's violated the timelines.
Mm-hmm. Well,
there is a point in the comics where there is a council of Kangs arguing with each other.
Well, so we know he's coming. This is the thing, is that from what we have been led to believe, Kang plays a non-zero part in the next Ant-Man movie, which is Quantumania. So we know he's coming. So this would be a good way to lay the groundwork.
We see his city or where he lives in the quantum realm, by the way, if you're looking close.
In where?
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Oh, in Ant-Man and the Wasp. Okay. So,
well, now I'm going to have to like Zapruder those sequences. So I can.
Yeah. So that's why I was wondering, like, that was, those were the dots I was trying to connect, is because I know that if you have a Ravonna dot and you have a Kang dot, there's a line there. It may be stabby, but it's definitely a line, and we know that he's coming. And so that's why I wondered if maybe we get him a little bit before the next Ant-Man, which would be interesting, since another thing that we heard in this episode was the word multiverse and the word Nexus, two nice little throwbacks to WandaVision.
And you know why? Because Michael Waldron is the guy who created the Loki series. And he is also, ta-da, the author of the writer for the next Doctor Strange
and the Multiverse of Madness. Yeah.
And so they actually asked him in an interview last week about the link to WandaVision and whatever. Did a pro job of dodging and and muddying that question. The really interesting thing for me is not Kang, because they're not going to unveil him here, because they want to unveil him in the in a movie. They're not going to.
Okay.
The really interesting thing for me here, and what we should talk about in remaining time, is who the Sheol, Sofia Di Martino and Richard E. Grant are going to play.
Ooh,
because boy, do I have theories on that one.
I cannot wait to hear that.
So at the end of the movie, we see the hooded person who we presume is a Loki variant killing the other hunter, whose name I can't remember, and his team back in the 19th century.
Yeah.
In Oklahoma. in an oil field, and killing them with a very low-tech way, just setting fire to the oil. I got to hand it to that. So the question is that Sofia Di Martino playing Lady Loki?
Mm.
Or is that Richard E. Grant playing Old Man Loki?
I'm honestly hoping that Richard E. Grant plays Lady Loki, personally.
I'm with Lisa on this one.
That would be interesting.
Yes.
And you know, knowing Richard E. Grant as an actor, he would be up for that. So do you all, by the way, do you know about Lady Loki? And did you read the little bio shot? I had to go back and pause it when they were showing the little thing about Loki. And
the folder?
The folder, where they list his gender.
And it's fluid, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is, by the way, not something they invented in the show. This is something that's not only went on in the Marvel comic universe for years, God bless them, but it is actually in Norse myth with Loki.
I was about to say, Loki has babies. He gives birth to an eight-legged horse.
Yes, he also gives birth to Hela.
Yes.
Hela is not Freya's daughter in North Myth.
No.
Mythology. She's Loki's daughter.
And Jormungandr Jaeger is his too.
Yes.
So yeah. So to sidetrack on Norse myth for just a minute, like my daughter got big into mythology over the past few years. And so we have a compendium of Norse myths and Greek myths and a couple other books aimed at kids that also tackle other mythological figures in other mythological cultures. And one thing that always stands out is the really conflicted relationship that Norse mythology seems to have with Loki. Specifically, the fact that Loki is the one who consistently solves problems for the idiots who run Asgard.
Yeah.
Yep.
The Aesir. Like, the Aesir are especially stupid. And Loki always solves their problems, and they loathe and resent him for it. And there's always, like, a twist to give it the he had it coming story ending. So I'm also kind of curious to see how that's going to play here, if there's going to be a little bit of, well, Loki is kind of obnoxious and self-sabotaging, or if we're going to see a little bit more character growth based on the conversation that we had in episode one with Mobius, where he's like, you know, I'm powerless, and this is the best performance of power I have. I think this is super interesting that we're going to see Lady Loki at some point, and
I very much like the idea that we do. Mm-hmm. I'd be into it because I like the idea of the Loki off. I mean, we're headed for the Loki off anyway. We knew that.
Yeah.
But I'm super excited to see where, like how that goes down.
Yeah.
I mean, now that we know, like, the rest is just details, but it's going to be super.
Yeah. And we only have, as Lisa said in the beginning, we only have six episodes to do this in. So once we get the, we should probably consider it as three acts, two episodes each, like we did with Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Because that was six episodes as well, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Was it six or was it eight? No. Like 2021 is honestly like a blur to me.
Yeah, I don't know anymore.
Whoa,
I don't even remember.
I feel you on that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like we got a good amount of setup in this episode. Yeah. I just want to sort of wrap up my assessment here. I feel like, because I know some people said it was slow, but I think maybe those people were not as in love with the aesthetic. So like, as they were talking, I was very engaged with looking around at everything and seeing what I could see. I think I saw Stan Lee painted into a painting at the into one of the walls at the TVA when they have like the big posters of everybody. I think that was him.
I'm going to have to go back and look.
I think there saw Haley Atwell.
The cynic in me thinks that the TVA is a perfect setup for a future Disney ride.
Absolutely.
Like, you could just imagine, I'm sure there's like a technical term or like a Disney fan term for the area where they move the line through before the ride, and they always
the queue. Just the ride queue.
And they always have, you know, like posters or
take your tickets.
Loops. Yeah. Or audio loops or what have you. Like, I'm thinking of Star Tours, especially where you've got the droids and there's the different schedules. Like, the TVA would be a perfect ride, especially if it were a roller coaster where you're super disoriented and you're and Mobius appears and, oh, I just blipped you back. Whing!
Ride through the multiverse. That's what you're going
to
do.
Yeah. Like, the cynic in me is like, this would be just a great addition to whatever they're going to do to tie Marvel into the rest of the thing. Because honestly, the way they were flinging people around with all those devices, I was like, it's like your own personal roller coaster through time and space.
Yes. I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
And by the way, as another like little post segment to really there, the TVA is formidable in the comics, but they're not exactly that kind of powerful. So I'm really curious where they go with this. And Kelly's theory in the beginning where this is, you know, sort of a breakdown. Or did you say that on Slack this morning, Kelly? I can't remember. Mm. It's all a blur.
Probably on Slack.
Probably on Slack.
Yeah. That somehow Loki teams up. Like, Loki kind of gets himself together a little bit.
Yeah.
And something over the course of that particular adventure of his helps, like, influence the Timekeeper somehow. And so at the end, he ends up with more power than he ever set out to grab for himself because of some sort of, like, bargain or something, you know, that he gets to do, that he gets to make with them because of some sort of something inherent in him or her, you know, depending which Loki we're talking about. And somehow he ends up being able to trade for getting restored to a timeline or something. And like, he gets to sort of have his way, but also like wield way more power than he ever even imagined was possible. So that's my theory about that.
And like, maybe overall, even dismantle a bit of the TVA's omnipotence or whatever.
I very much think that's going to be fun. And I sort of like the idea that Mobius helps him do it.
Well, I feel like one of the central tensions that they introduced with Loki as a character here, especially when Mobius was like, and then you rule, so what? Loki has been thinking of power as, I need to take over this structure and make it work for me. And Mobius is like, is that really what you think power is? And what I'm wondering now is if Loki's going to think big to the point where he's like, we don't need a TVA. Like, the ultimate expression of power would be to completely unravel and dismantle it. Dang it, I am breaking my own vow. I didn't want to speculate because we do this every time. We're like, man, this is our theory. And then, like, five episodes later, we're like, oh, we were so wrong. So I was like,
welcome to podcasting with Don and Kelly.
I was like, I'm just going to like, take this as it comes be open and receptive.
No, you won't.
Because
it crawls in your brain and then, like, you can't get rid of it because you keep turning it over. And what if this? And what about that?
You
and
two I think are there'll such be influences. This thing. Such influencers.
I know. I'm Don. It's working.
It's working. It's totally working.
The thing I thought was also interesting about this show is that they're obviously setting the show up to be a Nexus event of its own, because they said multiverse, which gave us the Doctor Strange. And also, and Wanda's a part of that. So the next Doctor Strange movie is called Multiverse of Madness. Mm-hmm. We know that Wanda has a big part in that. So, we can throw back to the first show. We got Infinity Stones, which hooks us back to a bunch of other things. If we do get any sort of Kang something, that ties us over to Ant-Man and, Loki tying in with some other things. And there's a reference in the middle of that I know I'm forgetting, that I can't even remember right now, but like, we've got this show sort of tied out to all these other places and all of these other things that we know are happening. So I really like how this is fitting in with all of those, because at least right now, one entire episode in, it doesn't feel forced.
And by the way, if you have Disney stock, boy, this is a way for them to show they are just going to be a money printing machine.
Yes.
They're going to be bringing it in from alternate timelines and dimensions after a while.
Oh, yeah. Pretty much.
What was it last time? He got his butt kicked in various formats. This one is, Disney is printing currency in various formats. That's what's happening. Yes. I really also appreciated at the end that it felt like Loki was sort of being accidentally truthful. Mm-hmm. Like, he didn't, it felt like he was sort of dragging it out of him, like, to confess, like, I do it because it's what has to be done to convince people I'm all powerful or whatever. And I really appreciated that moment with him. And I thought that was really interesting.
And I thought that actually shows the range that we're going to see in the series, obviously humor, and let me just do a shout out, because I can't believe Kelly hasn't already done this, but the music, certainly there were callbacks to earlier stuff, but whoever's doing the music, I can't think, Natalie Holt, she's doing the music. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that cello or violin that she was doing, some of this, that just hit me right in the feels. It was just perfect, spot on. And that shows you it's not just going to be a comedy.
Yep. I really
and
appreciated
I'm looking, it. I'm looking forward to tears and anguish with this show, too.
Absolutely. I'm going to point out that if you have a theory for Kelly's Home of Wayward Theories, you can send those to us on Twitter at I Want My MCU TV. I want to make sure we get that in because we're about to wrap. So you can definitely send us stuff there. You can follow us. We will talk about other things. But we definitely want to know what kind of theories you have. The wackier, the better. We certainly do love them.
We love the crazy.
Oh,
we love the crazy. And we'll do shout outs. Yeah, bring it.
Yes.
Right. Well, you know what? We have zipped through this with the same sort of expository speed and disorientation with which Loki was rushed through the TVA in this episode.
And I want to say publicly to my co-host, I didn't think we could do it in this amount of time, and I was completely wrong.
No. Oh my God, mark this down.
No, we could have done it. We needed, you know, twice as much. But yeah, we're being ruthlessly efficient, and also remembering how to get back on the bike.
Yeah,
it's been a little while.
And so, yeah. I want to thank everybody who hung in there and eagerly waited for us to come back to resume again the yoke of our glorious purpose. I want to thank Don Melton and Kelly Gamont for this crazy ride.
Betcha.
I assume they're not robots, which is something we can get into in the next episode.
Well, I'll go through the gate and we'll know for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. And I want to thank
Jason.
Keith?
Thank Jason.
And Jason.
Oh,
thank you, Jason.
Jason. We want to thank everybody. It feels so good to be back, you guys. This has been I Want My MCU TV with Kelly Gamont.
Thank you so much.
Don Melton.
Yo.
And me, Lisa Schmeiser.
For all